Listeners, as you may have heard, Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, is blocking Canadian access to all content created by news providers, including this radio station, in response to the Online Broadcasting Act. Access to local news and information matters to everyone, and while radio stations use their airwaves to keep you informed, we also use social media to share local news, events, and initiatives, and even content about our upcoming programming. We need you to write your MP and convey your concerns. Learn more and find a letter template for your MP on our website. Thank you for your support.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Idalia is the strongest storm to hit this part of Florida, to make landfall in this part of Florida in over 100 years.
I don't think anybody can deny the impact of the climate crisis anymore.
Hurricane Idalia has left a trail of flooding and destruction from Florida to the Carolinas. We'll look at the climate emergency with NASA scientist Peter Kalmus, who warns that climate disasters will only get worse. Plus, we look at another crisis, the rapidly shrinking supply of groundwater in the nation's aquifers.
When we overpump aquifers, what we do is we create a space for saltwater intrusion, which dramatically endangers both wildlife as well as the economic stability of our nation.
But first, a military coup in the oil-rich Central African nation of Gabon has ended over 50 years of rule by a single family, which had close ties to both France and the United States. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. After barreling through Florida, the downgraded tropical storm Idalia lashed Georgia and South Carolina, inundating coastal towns, leaving 300,000 customers without power across all three states as of early this morning. As Idalia moves offshore and up the Atlantic, North Carolina residents are bracing themselves for more heavy downpours and possible tornadoes. Officials warn dangerous storm surges are still possible. Two people died in Florida in a car crash linked to extreme weather. In Florida's Big Bend region on the Gulf of Mexico, some evacuated residents returned to utterly destroyed homes, including this mother and daughter in Horseshoe Beach.
What matters is what I'm holding right here. It's just material stuff.
I know. It's so our retirement, our own life.
It's material. We're going to rebuild.
23 years.
It's going to be good. It's going to be fun.
President Biden spoke at the White House on the federal response to the storm and other climate disasters.
I don't think anybody can deny the impact of the climate crisis anymore. Just look around. Historic floods, more intense droughts, extreme heat, significant wildfires have caused significant damage like we've never seen before.
In the Central African nation of Gabon, the military junta has announced General Brice Oligui Nguema will serve as transitional leader following Wednesday's coup that ousted Gabon's president, Ali Bongo, whose family has ruled the oil-rich former French colony for over half a century. Many residents of Gabon celebrated Bongo's ouster, but the African Union and the United Nations have condemned the coup, which came just days after a contested election. The ousted president remains under house arrest and appeared in a video Wednesday pleading for help. We'll have more on Gabon after headlines. In South Africa, at least 73 people died as a massive fire tore through a five-story building in downtown Johannesburg that housed squatters living in crap makeshift conditions. Many of them were believed to be migrants. Officials say at least seven children are among the dead. Harrowing scenes showed scores of lifeless bodies lined up on the streets as rescue teams continue to search for people. Witnesses and survivors described the chaos as people tried to flee the burning building.
The actual fire escape was closed, so there was a lot of people, a lot of people were smoke, people were suffocated, a lot of people died because of the smoke, because there was a lot of pressure at the gates, some of the gates were closed.
The building was once an apartheid government checkpoint for black workers. The scarcity of affordable housing in Johannesburg has driven people to take shelter in unsafe, overcrowded, abandoned buildings, which often lack sewage, electricity, and other basic amenities. The UN says fighting between Ethiopia's military and the regional Fano militia in the Amhara region has killed at least 183 people over the last month. A state of emergency was declared in the region early this month, leading to the arbitrary arrest of more than 1,000 people, many believed to be young people of ethnic Amhara origin. The latest conflict broke out after Ethiopian forces reclaimed major towns and cities in the northern region. Amhara soldiers fought on the side of the Ethiopian military during the two-year conflict in northern Tigray. Migrant deaths around El Paso, Texas, reached a 25-year high this year, with at least 136 deaths. Roughly 100 of those were recorded starting in May as temperatures started to soar. The death toll is at least 87% higher than last year. The area in question spans the U.S.-Mexico border from just east of metropolitan El Paso in Texas across New Mexico's southern border. Some deaths were caused by people falling off border fences, but most of them are attributed to extreme heat. Ground temperatures as hot as 150 degrees have been recorded this summer amidst record-smashing heat waves. A Texas judge just ruled a new state law barring cities from making a wide range of local decisions unconstitutional. Among other things, it would have prohibited local governments from requiring water breaks for construction workers. Texas's HB 2127, dubbed the Death Star Bill, was set to go into effect Friday, was part of an effort by Texas's Republican Party and Governor Greg Abbott to control increasingly progressive and Democrat-led cities. The law was challenged by Houston, San Antonio, and El Paso. Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner celebrated the decision, saying, quote, "This self-defeating war on cities needs to end," he said. Texas's attorney general has already appealed the ruling. The Biden administration unveiled a new rule that would see some 3.6 million new workers entitled to overtime pay. The Labor Department's proposing raising eligibility to salaried workers who earn up to $55,000 per year, up from around $35,500. Those employees would be guaranteed time and a half pay after working more than 40 hours a week. The change would benefit workers across a range of industries, including manufacturing, healthcare, and retail. Some trade groups condemned the rule and could seek to challenge it in court. The Congressional Progressive Caucus welcomed the move, but urged increasing the salary threshold to workers making up to $80,000 a year. President Biden said he would speak to Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who Biden called a good friend, after the 81-year-old Republican leader froze for around 30 seconds while speaking to reporters in Kentucky before two aides intervened.
I'm sorry, I had a hard time hearing you.
That's okay. What are your thoughts on running for re-election in 2026?
What are my thoughts about what?
Running for re-election in 2026.
Oh, that's
Did you hear the question, Senator? Running for re-election in 2026?
Yes.
All right, I'm
McConnell
sorry, we're going to need a minute.
Senator. Continued to just stand there until his aides took him away. It's the second such incident in this in a little over a month as questions mount over McConnell's ability to finish out his term. The senator froze in late July while speaking to reporters in the U.S. Capitol and also had to be escorted away. McConnell suffered a concussion from a fall in March and has had several more falls since then. New York Attorney General Letitia James says Donald Trump inflated his net worth by as much as $2.2 billion in a year in order to secure loans and business deals. James said in a motion to a judge that there was already sufficient evidence Trump and his associates committed financial fraud and a trial was not necessary. Meanwhile, Trump's lawyers argued the case should be thrown out altogether because the loans in question are too far in the past to be considered by the court. If the judge does not side with either party, Trump's New York trial will go ahead as planned in October. A federal judge found Rudy Giuliani liable in a defamation lawsuit brought by two Georgia election workers after the disgraced Trump lawyer failed to turn over information sought in subpoenas. Giuliani accused Ruby Freeman and her daughter Shay Moss of committing fraud as they tallied ballots in Atlanta during the 2020 election. It was part of the Trump team's effort to overturn the former president's loss in Georgia. Wednesday's ruling means the defamation case against Giuliani can proceed to a trial, which will determine damages. They are seeking millions of dollars. And in Brazil, indigenous groups from around the country rallied in Brasilia on Wednesday as the country's Supreme Court resumed hearings yesterday in a pivotal case that could strip indigenous rights to their ancestral lands. The case is being pushed by agribusiness-backed lawmakers who argue native groups are only entitled to land that they physically occupied when the 1988 Constitution was signed. Many indigenous communities were expelled from their ancestral land over the years, including during the military dictatorship. This is Joênia Wapixana, a member of the Wapixana tribe and president of the National Commission of the Defense of Rights of Indigenous Peoples.
There is a constitution and it must be respected. So in that vein, we hope that the Supreme Court does justice with the lives of indigenous peoples and protects indigenous lands for indigenous people and all living beings.
If enacted, the measure could have dire consequences, not just for the indigenous people of Brazil, but for the preservation of the Amazon and the entire planet. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. We begin today's show in the Central African country of Gabon, where military leaders seized power on Wednesday from President Ali Bongo, whose family had ruled the oil-rich former French colony for more than 50 years. The coup occurred shortly after Bongo had been named the winner of Saturday's contested election. The military junta has announced General Brice Oligui Nguema would serve as transitional leader.
Faisant suite à la réunion de ce jour,
all of the commanders-in-chief and chiefs of staff, as well as the generals in the second section of the Gabonese Republic, were present for the meeting. General Brice Oligui Nguema was unanimously appointed chairman of the Committee for the Transition and Restoration of Institutions, president of the transition.
President Bongo remains under house arrest. He pleaded for help in a video that aired Wednesday.
I'm Ali Bongo Ondimba, president of Gabon, and I'm to send a message to all the friends that we have all over the world to tell them to make noise. For the people here have arrested me and my family. My son is somewhere, my wife is in another place, and I'm at the residence. Right now, I'm at the residence and nothing is happening. I don't know what's going on. So I'm calling you to make noise, really.
Ali Bongo and his family have long been accused of enriching themselves at the expense of the country. The ousted president's father, Omar Bongo, ruled Gabon from 1967 to his death in 2009, when Ali Bongo was elected to his first term. In 2007, a probe by French police revealed the Bongo family had 39 properties in France and 70 bank accounts. Both Omar and Ali Bongo were close allies to France and the United States. Ali Bongo met with President Biden at the White House last year. The coup in Gabon comes just weeks after a military coup in Niger, another former French colony. In recent years, there have also been coups in Mali, Guinea, Burkina Faso, and Chad. On Wednesday, the United Nations and the African Union condemned the coup.
We're joined now by two guests. Joining us from France is Thomas Deltombe. He's a French journalist and essayist. He edited a book titled A History of Françafrique, the Empire That Does Not Want to Die. That's the title translated from French. In New York, Daniel Mangara joins us, professor of French and Francophone Studies in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Montclair State University. He's the author of Gabon in Danger, the title translated from the French. In 1998, Mangara created the exiled opposition movement Bongo Must Leave, which he continues to lead. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Daniel Mangara, we thank you so much for being with us. We're going to begin with you. Can you explain what has just taken place in your country?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Now, I think that I heard in your segments that the international community was condemning what was going on in Gabon, especially the UN and the African Union. I'm actually surprised because I believe these are the types of coups that actually must be supported because they're undoing what I might call the rape of a nation. Gabon has been ruled for 56 years by the same family and the same regime. I don't know if people can imagine the scope of what we're talking about here. Omar Bongo came to power in 1967. He ruled for 42 years. And when he died in 2009, his son took over and has now ruled for 14 years. What that means is that Gabon is today one of only two republics, and I mean non-monarchical republics, to have been ruled for 56 years by the same family and the same regime. And for Americans who are listening here today, 56 years is equal to 9 American presidents under Omar Bongo from 1963, Lyndon Johnson, to Barack Obama. And so the Bongo family has ruled without regard for democracy. All the elections in Gabon have been stolen. And I think that the coup is actually a restitutive coup in a sense that it's actually restituting to the Gabonese nation a voice that will allow them now, perhaps through dialogue, to rebuild after 56 years of what I might call a disaster. And so I tend to believe that we should support the coup leaders in Gabon. This is the type of coup that we should support because it is a result of It is, in fact, a reaction to the fact that once more, Ali Bongo, the Bongo family, tried to steal an election. And for once in Gabonese history, well, the military stepped in and have now allowed for the possibility of democratic change in Gabon if we're able to negotiate a peaceful resolution to the crisis.
Well, Daniel Mangera, you've said that the coup should be supported by the international community, and we've seen some footage of people in Libreville, the capital, celebrating the coup. But if you could explain, you know, who is behind the coup? What kind of relationship did the Gabonese military have with Bongo? And the fact that there was already an attempted coup in 2019, what happened then?
Well, we know that there's been general discontent in Gabon, you know, by the Bongo family. Now, Commander Brice Oligui Nguema, who took over as interim president now, certainly is part of what we call the presidential guard. Traditionally, this is the guard that has been protective of the president. That's like, in Gabon, at least historically, that's been more like a personal guard to protect a dictator. So the regular army in Gabon has no power, no armament that would actually allow it to serve, you know, as a Republican army. And in this sense, the guard of Bongo has been usually perceived as complicit, you know, protective of the regime. And so even, Commander Oligui himself, you know, has been accused by the Gabonese people of having been behind some of the repressions, you know, that have gone on, you know, over the Bongo regime. But today, we do believe that, despite all that, their ability to now question the Bongo regime themselves and to decide to take over opens up new possibilities for Gabon. Now, the reaction of the people has been that, you know, in general, positive, because they're very happy that for once the Bongo family has been at least disabled to the point of opening up the possibility of perhaps later on democracy for Gabon. And I would say that, you know, if we have to lead to a simple conclusion, we do have to believe that this is a rare opportunity for the Gabonese people to engage in national dialogue that would allow for perhaps in 2 years, you know, after the transition,
to go into democratic rule. And that's why I think that the international community must look at this as an opportunity for Gabon to actually enter a new era of democratic change.
Well, I'd like to bring in Thomas Deltombe into the conversation. Your book, the book you edited, is titled A History of France-Afrique, The Empire That Does Not Want to Die. So, Thomas, if you could respond to what Daniel Manguera has said, in particular about the military in Gabon and the relationship of its military to France. France has reportedly a series of agreements with the militaries of many of its former colonies. It's been 60 years, over 60 years, since most of France's African colonies have gained independence, most of which were in 1960, including Gabon. But since then, France has intervened militarily more than 50 times on the continent. So if you could begin first by just talking about the relationship between the military and France, the Gabonese military and France.
Yes, thank you very much to having me on your show. I think it's very important to go back and to know history to understand what's happening right now in Gabon in particular, but in French-speaking Africa in general. I think it's important to know the history of what we call this France-Afrique in one word. This term, one word, sums up the extremely close relationship, the fusional relationship that France managed to maintain with its former colony in Africa, despite or thanks to the fake independence it granted to its former colonies in 1960. And Gabon is the extreme example of this these fake independence. You know that the first head of state of Gabon was not Omar Bongo but Leomba. Leomba was a guy who was nominated by the French and who refused independence. He didn't want to have his country independent. It's the French who forced him to accept independence, and they said to him explicitly, "Don't worry, it's not a true independence. We'll give you independence, but at the same time, you will have to sign what we call cooperation agreements. So, in fact, we give you independence freedom with the left hand, but we're taking it back with the right hand with these cooperations, the cooperation agreements. And these cooperation agreements are at the heart of what we see today. It's big. These cooperation agreements allowed France to maintain its military apparatus in their former colonies, to maintain the colonial monetary system beyond the independence, and to intervene military wherever it pleased. And you know, there had been a first coup in Gabon in 1964, and the French intervened militarily to put Leomba back on his presidential chair. And then they immediately began to prepare the accession to power of his vice president, Albert Bongo, at this time, the future Omar Bongo, who was installed in 1967. And the presidential guard itself was trained and formed by the French militaries back in the 1960s. So it's like the independence of Gabon has never been real. And we have to bear that in mind, otherwise we can't understand what's happening right now.
And just to elaborate further on that term that's in your title, France-Afrique, that is a term. It also, freak means sort of money. And so it's like France's piggy bank, that's what Africa is. Is that fair to say? In addition to being one word, you know, France is Africa, said here now with irony.
Yeah, this France-Afrique was permitted, had the goal to secure access to strategic raw materials, oil, of course, gas, uranium, manganese, gold, etc., etc. So France could maintain its grip on its former colonies and Gabon in particular, and. Because the Gabonese elite became very, very rich thanks to that France-African system, it could send back money to the ex-metropole France and to secretly finance the political scene, people from the left and people from the right, and try to influence the political life in France. And Omar Bongo was like very, very good at this game. And one day on the French radio, he said, you know, France can't do anything, can't do harm to me because I know so many secrets. And among these secrets was the question of the financing of the French political scene.
Daniel Manguera, if you could talk about, respond to what Thomas said, in particular, the economic conditions in Gabon, the fact that the country is extremely rich in natural resources and is one of Africa's richest countries on a per capita basis, but most of the population is extremely poor. So if you could talk about this fact, the Bongo family enriching itself along with other members of the elite, and the concept of bien mal acquis. What exactly does that mean, and how does it apply in this case?
Yes. What we're talking really about here is the pillaging of the Gabonese economy by the Bongo family. There was, a decade ago, a documentary that was published by France 2, which is a French one of the French TV stations, that published a report that under ELF Gabon, which was this French company exploiting Gabonese oil, the Bongo family reserved itself 18% of Gabonese income. Compare that to what they allocated to the Gabonese the nation itself, which was just 25%. So the Bongo family took 18% and giving to Gabon only 25% of Gabonese oil income under ELF. And so that gives you, the magnitude of what we're talking about. I do want to go back a little bit, and I'll come back to the economic elements in a moment, but I want to go back to the idea of the France-Afrique, because when we to understand actually why the Gabonese are very unhappy with the way the Bongos manage the economy, we have to go back to that France-Afrique notion and understand that General de Gaulle, with Jacques Foccart, had actually arranged for Omar Bongo to come to power in 1967 because Leomba was sick in France at the time, where he actually died. But before he died, they organized an election in Gabon after modifying the Gabonese constitution to make it look like the American style of constitution, where you have a vice president who would automatically succeed the president upon the president's death. And that's what happened. So Bongo came to power based on an arrangement that France actually put together to ensure that as soon as President Mba died, Omar Bongo would succeed him. And so that relationship had been ongoing forever, to the point when the Gabonese, when they look at their country, and it is indeed today, one of the two highest per capita incomes in Africa, Equatorial Guinea and Gabon actually have the highest per capita income in continental Africa today. And so the Bongo family have basically, through corrupt means, ransacked the Gabonese economy to the point that the Gabonese are not seeing really where that money is going. Recently, in fact, during the coup, the coup leaders actually arrested some of the members of the Bongo government. And in fact, we were surprised to find that in their own houses, they were keeping amounts such as like $7 million the equivalent of $7 million in their houses. You know, that gives you the magnitude of the corruption in Gabon, the way the Bongo family have basically been acquiring properties around the world, expensive cars, but not much of that has been trickling down into the Gabonese people's pockets. And I think that one of the grievances of the Gabonese lies right there in the relationship between France and the Bongo family.
And so, Professor Mangara, your movement is called Bongos Must Leave. Would you add to that France must leave? And do you think General Brice Oligui Nguema will represent something different? How do you